Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast Supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
This podcast will definitely contain naughty words and spoilers.
Hello everybody, welcome back for our next episode of Hayley Watches. I almost forgot we were doing then. Our name was... I mean, we've been doing this since August now, haven't we? So I still haven't quite got... almost forgot who we were.
Is it since August, really?
Yeah, since August, yeah.
Bloody hell.
Yeah. As you may have noticed, we changed the day that we're releasing our podcast.
Yeah.
As lovely as it was to give a little hump day treat, it was quite hard, wasn't it, in the end?
Yeah, now it's end of the week or start of the week.
Yeah.
Treat. Depends how you want to see Sunday.
Yeah. People usually count down, all depressed. They've got to work. Maybe I don't know, work in shifts. I'm always just working.
Maybe we'll brighten some Mondays.
Yeah. Give you a good feeling on a Monday morning.
Or bore you to sleep on Sunday.
Bore you to sleep on Sunday, yeah.
Who knows?
Well, yeah. We'll find out, won't we? So you chose Sleepers.
Hell yeah.
I was a bit worried about how we're going to do this on the podcast, because it was quite a washy one, wasn't it?
Yeah, quite a pay attention-y film.
Yeah. I didn't write very many notes because I was watching. So we'll see how this goes. Also, we watched it like over a week ago now.
We managed to do Goodfellas, so this is definitely doable.
I'm sure it'll be fine. It was... made in 1996. So a little synopsis of the film. There's like a really awesome like turn of phrase in this, which is just brilliant. So it says, initially, the lives of four boys, Lorenzo, John, Michael and Tommy, seem hunky-dory.
Oh my God, where does it say that?
It says on... it's not on Google. But their life changes... Hunky-dory.
I mean,
well, it makes me think of a Knickerbocker Glory, like it's some sort of ice cream.
Also, if you watch the film, their lives are clearly not hunky-dory. Like, yeah.
But their life changes upside down when a street prank goes disastrously awry.
Awry, yeah. Oh, God. Does it ever.
My God, does it ever. I'm happy I didn't read that before I watched the film. I would have given quite a lot away. It opens the film saying that it is a true story, and that because of, I think it just says that their friendship runs deeper than blood. Out of the four of them, two were killers. Attorney has left and isn't able to speak, so he's basically speaking for them.
Yep.
And the children that they were. So this is like a
voiceover.
So I tried really hard after we watched Goodfellas not to write too much of, like, the commentary stuff.
Because
otherwise it just gets confusing. But you see, basically, whilst that he's doing like voiceover, there's four boys dancing, isn't there? Then there's some more credits. It says that it's based on a book.
Yeah.
And it's Hell's Kitchen in 1966. And it's the summer, and they're like sunbathing on the roof. It's pretty cool music, actually, in this.
Just as England were winning the World Cup.
Oh, my God. And we have yet to do that again.
All right, let's not dwell on that.
So, yeah, there's like loads of kids playing in the street, and it's all about how there's loads of different cultures living together. How, like, basically they're always fighting, like, the families, and that they can't really leave. There's no such thing as divorce. Everyone, like, are together till they die, so they just sort of beat up their wives and stuff, it's just don't they?
This bit's like just an overview of life in Hell's Kitchen. Yeah. So they tell you about, like, it's a melting pot. Is it, like, Catholics, like, Irish immigrants, Italian immigrants?
Yeah.
I think he says somewhere else, but mainly Catholic. Like, women were married to hard men, so like hard working, hard drinking, hard hitting. You know, most of the women waited on their husbands like hand and foot, and were greeted by, like, thanked for it with a belt or a fist or something.
It's just pretty,
like you say, there's no divorce normally. For a marriage to end, someone has to die.
Basically, then there's quite an important bit that he says next that is the vein through most of the film, is that there's no crimes against the people in Hell's Kitchen. It's not allowed. They don't hurt each other.
Against the community.
And I think some druggy guy came in and did something, and then they basically killed the druggy, and there's a nice shot of him hanging, I think.
Yeah, he's a drug dealer. He's been selling drugs to kids in Hell's Kitchen.
Yeah.
And someone ODs and dies, so they take revenge by stringing him up from a lamppost.
Mm-hmm.
And
seems fair enough to me.
Lorenzo's dad takes him down to see him hanging from the lamppost.
Yeah.
Quite a good, well, not quite a good thing, but yeah, quite like they establish, like, crime. He says in the thing that crimes against the neighbourhood are forbidden.
Yeah.
Like, if you live in Hell's Kitchen, you can go out of Hell's Kitchen and do what you like, but you just can't
do it inside.
You can't rob or kill anyone inside Hell's Kitchen. Like,
that's the rules. Dem the rules.
Dem's the rules.
So they served as altar boys, and it's like a really funny prank. They said that I do pranks all the time, and one of them gets a clicker, and the girl, so they're all watching like a service, and there's the girls from like the church school that's run by the nuns, and that she controls them with a clicker, which I think is fucking awful.
Hilarious.
Why clicker? So they, the girls are controlled to stand up and sit down and pray or whatever by the amount of times they're woman clicks a button. So the boys get it, and they basically are clicking it and making them stand up and down. And
while the priest or whatever's mid talking, this is like a brilliant.
And then you see Robert De Niro, who is Father Bobby. He sits behind them and he's like, "Give me the clacker." And then he starts clicking it as well, which is quite funny.
Yeah, just to fuck about.
Then two of the boys go into a confessional booth thing. And a lady comes in, and they're like talking about how, I think the two that go in were thinking about careers within the church or something. So they're sat in there, and a lady comes in, and she's basically saying that she's sleeping around with married men and that she's pregnant, and they're like trying to answer her questions. And then she's like, "Oh, I know you guys can keep it to yourself." And like, "Oh, she knew I was in there." Oh.
Yeah, she knows. They're not actually priests, they just do kids sat in there, and she just told them anyway.
Yeah.
Because one of them's like, I think one of them says, she just had to tell somebody, like, she didn't care.
No. So, there's Robert De Niro. I don't know, I've written down, he said he wanted to be a priest. I don't know if it wants to be like a priest like him, I don't really know.
Oh, he sees Lorenzo, or Shakes, as his nickname, isn't it? So he sees him on the street eating ice cream and stuff, and he's like, "Oh, I heard a rumour that you wanted to be a priest."
That's it, yeah.
And it's basically how he confronts him about, he knows he was in the confession booth.
Yeah.
And he's like, "Oh, you're going to help me with this later."
Yeah.
And then he says something like, "Oh, that's it." He says, he swears, doesn't he, or something like that. He says, I swear or something like that. And Shakes is like, oh, a priest shouldn't swear. And he's like, then kids shouldn't be listening to people's confessions. I'll see you tonight.
Yeah. He's pretty cool. And then they're at a pond and one of the guys is kissing a girl called Carol. And then they're basically talking about how Carol helps them out with their stuff. So she's keeping watch whilst they've made a hole in the wall. They're looking at the showgirls getting dressed and looking at their boobs and stuff.
How they all sort of have a thing for this one girl. So this one girl hangs around with these four boys and they all got a crush on her.
Yeah, it's a little bit like It.
Yeah, without the gangbang.
Yeah, well, I never read the book, so...
Yeah, that's the weird... It's so weird in that book.
Yeah, it's a bit strange, isn't it? Then they talk about King Benny, who is a hitman.
He's my favourite character.
He's pretty cool.
King Benny. He's cool AF.
So they're in a barber, and the barber's, like, telling them a story about him.
It's Shake's dad tells the story.
Oh, is it? Oh, yeah. I didn't know it was Shake's dad. Yeah.
While he's getting, like, a proper shave.
Who is?
The dad. He's, like, sat in the barber's chair.
Oh, I thought you said it was the dad's barber his dad was the barber.
No, no, his dad's right. In the barber's chair, and he's getting, like, a full-on shave, and that's when he starts telling them the story of King Benny.
Cool. So, yeah, basically, he's always getting beaten up, and then gets thrown down the stairs and stuff, and he waits one of the guys, like, beats him up, and he waits 8 years to get even, and the guy sat in, like, a communal tub, and he comes in, because basically, like, all of his teeth got knocked out or something when he got thrown down the stairs. So he goes into, the communal baths and shoots the guy in the leg, and he said, like, every time I look in the mirror, I see you. Now, every time you look at your leg, you'll see me. So that was like that, really.
Quite a cool introduction.
Yeah,
he walks in, takes out his false teeth, then he's like, every time I look and see my face in the mirror, every time I look in the mirror, I see your face.
Yeah.
He shoots the guy twice in each leg while he's in the bath, and he's like, no, every time you have a bath, you see my face. And you're like, and then the dad says, oh, nobody ever fucked with King Benny after that. And your first thought is, I fucking wonder why.
Yeah, you're right.
I wouldn't have fucked with him after that.
So then Shakes goes, he is Shakes, isn't it?
Shakes,
Lorenzo's nickname is Shakes. No, as in he's the one that goes to see King Benny. That's the next scene. Yeah. So he goes to see King Benny and asks for a job. And he's like cooking. And he said, oh, you know, you've always got jobs for people. So, you know, give us a job. And he's like, no. And anyways, he says something else. He goes to leave. He's like, I'll come back tomorrow. So basically his job is to go around and he takes some money to pieces, like, or to police stations and like police officers.
Yeah.
So you don't see it straight away. But he goes down and see a couple of guys, drags him down the alleyway. And then an old man stops them and they're like, let him go. Basically, he gets a gun out. He tells Shakes to run away and then basically gunshot. So he's killed the blokes. And then he asks...
Neighbourhood, didn't they? Punished.
Yeah. Then he said, like, he needs help. So he gets his mates to come with him. And you just see him chucking money into the police cars. Then they're at a basketball court with Father Bobby. Talking about, like, he's worried about them doing that sort of work in case it escalates and that they should be doing more things. He says to the smallest one, I can't remember what his name is.
John.
He should be going to, like, art classes. And then he starts telling them all about Michelangelo and painting the Sistine Chapel and stuff.
There's a great line in there as well. They ask him how long it took Michelangelo to paint the Sistine Chapel. And they're like, took 16 years or something. Like, John replies with, Puerto Rican guy did our whole apartment in 2 days.
Yeah.
Brilliant.
It's like amazing.
But he didn't paint your apartment like the Sistine Chapel.
No. Not quite the same there. So then it's 1967 and it's winter. The TV is like them, a family, I don't know which family, sat watching the TV. It's like the protests and about Vietnam and... Then you see some coffins basically saying that, like, everyone would turn out for all the young men who'd gone and served in the Vietnam War that were coming back home. You see more of his Shake's mum getting beaten up. And he talks about how Bobby goes to the hospital because John's been beaten up by his mum's boyfriend.
Yeah, John, when you watch the film, he's like tiny as well, isn't he?
Yeah, he's well small.
And then they show you the bloke that's beat him up in the next scene, don't they? And he's fucking massive.
Yeah, he's huge. But then Father Bobby goes to speak to him and he's just like, if you touch him again, I'm going to beat the shit out of you.
Yeah, he's like, when I'm done with you, you won't need a doctor. You'll need a priest.
Yeah.
He's like, and the bloke's like, okay, shit.
Yeah. He's like, well, look at the size of you, and like, how big is John? Like, come on.
He says, then he's like, it was just a slap. Like, you put him in the hospital, you nearly killed him. That wasn't just a slap. He's right. Tiny. He's a little kid. Like, yeah, Father Bobby, don't take no shit.
So King Bobby then says, Benny says that he'd be a good hitman, which I think he would be. He's a pretty badass priest. Then you see kids playing the streets, so they're playing like baseball.
Yeah, they call it stickball in the film, but yeah, basically like baseball with a stick instead of a baseball bat.
Yeah, and then this girl turns up in a wheelchair. She's also like the bottom half one of her legs or something.
Isn't her legs, yeah.
So both her legs. So she's like shouting stuff to try and put them off, I guess. And then like one of the guys just shouts, "Sharp, you little gimp bitch." Like, oh my God.
I can't remember what his actual name is, the character, because they always refer to him as Fat Man.
Yeah.
He's fat. And he runs like the corner shop, doesn't he?
Yeah.
He's like Latin American, South American.
Yeah.
And he's like, "Yeah, you little gimp bitch." What's his other line is, "You've got no legs, but you've got a big mouth."
Yeah. <You're> like, brilliant.
Fucking hell, mate, all right?
Calm it down. So they do the game. He misses, but he's, I think, the taller one. Michael
got, like, loses the game on purpose.
Yeah. Yeah, he likes the look of her. They then go to that guy's cafe or wherever.
Like his little shop, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah, and they're talking about something. And he basically turns around to Michael and says that he has a thing for little girls with no legs.
Yeah, and that they're soft. They need to toughen up.
Yeah, so that's...
And I think it's John looks at him and he's like, "You stay out of our business, fat man."
Little shit.
What's going on?
Then it's 1967 and it's a summer and they're sunbathing again.
See, that's weird because I'm pretty sure when you did the date just now, and I always think this in the film, I always forget to like write it down and check, but you've written it down. I'm pretty sure you did it. The bit before is winter 1967. Yeah. Then it goes summer 1967. Yeah. Summer comes after winter.
Well, it's gone summer 1966.
Yeah.
Winter 1967. Oh. Yeah. Oh, I don't know.
It's confusing, isn't it?
Yeah.
I assume that by winter they mean like January and February.
Yeah. So this is when they say that their lives were forever altered. So you hear like loads of sirens and stuff and they're getting quite, they're hot and things, and they see a trolley and it's a hot dog vendor and they said, "We haven't hit that one for a while." Oh God, here we go. So they arguing over whose turn it is to go and basically rob the trolley.
Yep.
They've got like a trick that they do.
Yep.
And it shakes, isn't it, this time?
So it shakes his turn, yeah.
So he has to go up and order a hot dog with all the sauces.
And then ask for two napkins.
And then basically run off and not pay. So then the vendor can either chase after him and leave the trolley unattended, or just take the loss.
Yeah.
But the hot dog vendor runs after him. Yeah, yeah, so they like basically running for ages. So the other three kids go down and they like help themselves to food. And they decide stupidly to take the trolley just to move it so it confuses him. So they're chasing him. He's not giving up chasing Shakes. Shakes finds them. They're pushing the trolley. They decide to hang it over the stairs of to the subway.
Yeah, this is one of those...
I don't really understand why they thought this would be a good idea, but they hang it over the stairs of the subway.
Ultimate stupid kids' ideas as well. Like, the minute they decide to move it, and then when they get it, like, that's a stupid decision in the first place. Like, well, you don't need to move it. You've already met the guy. You don't need to make his day any worse. But they do. And then it's one of those... I can remember being in situations as a kid where I had light bulb moments like this, like, "Oh, wouldn't this be a brilliant idea?" And then you look back on it and you're like, "Wasn't that a really fucking stupid idea?"
Oh yeah, every time.
So this is one of
those. I still sounds like that now, babe.
Yeah, me too. So yeah, they all four of them go to, I think the plan is that they rest it on the top step of the subway.
Yeah.
And then when he comes to get, because when he gets close, he then can't grab them or anything because he's got to grab the car
trolley, yeah,
and
which
pull it back.
Logically makes sense.
Logically make absolute perfect sense, but being four small children, they forget that it's a hot dog vendor's cart that's got to cook and keep warm food and is full of gas tanks in the bottom, which they've literally talked about earlier when they first move it.
Yeah, because they're
heavy. So then they hang it over the edge and
can't hold on to it anymore, so let it go, and it crushes a man. So, yeah. Wonderful.
Goes down the stairs, just absolutely walloped him. There's a good line in that as well. This woman's like, what have you boys just done? And Michael's like, I'm pretty sure we just killed someone.
Yeah.
At this point as well, by the way, in the film, because like, we've kind of whizzed through that, but that's like a good 30, 40 minutes opening to the film with all these little...
Well, this is why I said I didn't write too much down, because most of it's just like Goodfellas. It's made around the same time.
Background.
It's all commentary whilst you watch it. So there's not really...
There's not a great deal of talking points. It's all introduction. But you're like at this point, like... looking at me like, really, you picked this to watch? Like, and then the cart went down the stairs and you were like, oh shit.
Yeah, it was just taking forever to get
stuff's
there.
Stuff's happening now.
I think since watching the Snyder Cart, I literally have realised like my literal point in films is 2 hours and I'm just fucking done. Like, and if it's slow, I really struggle. It's like,
I saw a great note about that the other day. Someone was like, no film is worth sitting and watching for 4 hours. Not single film ever. You need to break that down into 8 30-minute episodes that I can binge watch till 2 in the morning.
Well, I can do that because, you know, you can get up and move around, and I get bored. I've got to look at stuff. It's just not... especially when it's slow. So yes, basically he was fine. The guy's alive. Shockingly.
Yeah, yes, he's alive.
Like, he's got squished by a fucking hot dog trolley, but he's okay.
And you, does he, because they go to court now, don't they? Well, taken to court, but does that guy turn up at court?
The hot dog vendor does.
Hot dog vendor
but
does,
he's, they basically say that they've been remanded to their parents, so, because of their, like, basically, like, reckless endangerment.
Yeah.
So, like, you can see Shake's dad's, like, kicking off and breaking shit and...
Yeah, he's fucking pissed.
And they talk about how he's just a child. It's like, well, they knew what they were doing. They did something stupid. So, also, they did it in Hell's Kitchen where you don't hurt people. So they basically... Shake still gets asked to go to the church to help out because he needed an altar boy. And he's chatting away to, like, old Bobby about stuff. And they're, like, just getting dressed into their robes, or whatever they call them. I don't know. Yeah. So they go talking about something or other.
I like the bits where you didn't want to take notes. You're like, move it along. So you're like, they talk about stuff and stuff happens.
I think he's basically
interested at this point. I wanted something more to happen.
I think he was talking about how he was quite scared about the upcoming court thing. He said, you have to just kind of face it and get on with it. He goes, let's go. We have an audience. And I quite like that. Audience.
Oh yeah, Shake says about it like we could run away. Like no one's going to look for us. Who's going to care? No one's going to think. And Father Bobby's like, once you start running, you never stop running.
No,
like,
exactly.
You need to be a man and face up to what you've done.
Oh, and actually, oh God, when you think about what happens to them later on, you're like, They turn up at court, and it's all of them and their families, and they see the vendor. So we never really saw him as like a man.
Trying to feed a family.
Family, and, who's like, a father and things. I can't remember their names now. Tommy, John, and Michael.
Michael, yeah.
Get charged with 18 months, but no less than a year. And...
yeah, their sentence is a year to 18 months.
Yeah.
No more than 18 months, no less than
1 year. At... the school for young offenders.
Wilkinson. That's home it, yeah. For boys.
And then Shakes gets a year.
No more than 1 year, no less than 6 months.
Yeah.
Because he wasn't there when they actually took the cart
to
begin with. They actually say, like, he arrived later on the scene. And then the judge says if it wasn't for Father Bobby, they would have got longer.
Yeah.
As well.
Because, like, he vouched for them saying that they were, like, good kids. Well done, Father Bobby. Shake talks to Father Bobby and is like, watch my parents because they're probably going to kill each other. And just keep telling them that I'm okay.
No matter what he hears.
That he's okay. So they're travelling to the youth prison. And apparently there's 780 young offenders. And it looks like a nice university or school building.
Yeah, he says in the voiceover, it looks exactly how, like from the outside, it looks exactly how they want it to look, like a fancy school or something like that. But.
No, it's definitely not.
So you should probably say at this point, like, this is it for the getting to know characters, the background story and all that. now that they've gone to the home for boys, we're about to get into the... I suppose you could split this film into three parts, really, can't you? You got the... Yeah. Before now has been the getting to know everyone, learning about their background. Now we're getting to the...
Critical big, point.
Yeah, like the big, the motivational point of the rest of the film. Like the things that happen at Wilkinson's is what drives the rest of the film. And then we end in the third act with bringing it back full circle. But this is where the film really picks up. Because like I said, you were a bit, this is a lot of backstory that's moving quite slowly and I'm not really that getting into it. And then they get to the Wilkinson home for boys and all of a sudden you're like, okay, now the film's really started.
Yeah. Which I will say from this point on, just as like a bit of a trigger warning, really, that it is quite grim what's going to happen next. And
yeah, there's... So, let's not forget, it's four young boys have gone to a...
Correctional facility.
Yeah, like, it's supposed to be a reform school, but it's basically a prison for kids. And there's some stuff that's going to happen to them that, if you're a bit squeamish... This isn't the film for you.
Fine, triggering. Maybe you don't watch it. But, yeah, it's an uncomfortable view to say.
And we're just about to get into the talking of that. So if you're not really down with bad things happening to children, even in... especially as this is allegedly a true story.
Yeah.
Then you might just want to be like, do you know what? No, I'm not down with sleepers. I don't want to hear about it. I don't want to watch it. I'm going to turn this off.
Yeah.
And that's okay. But if you want to know what happens, then...
Carry on listening.
Here we go.
Oh, God.
You've been warned.
So, they talk about how they have a private room, and when you look at the room, it's got like a little single bed and a uniform on it. And so he's just sort of like stood there, and he's talking about how he doesn't feel like he's tough enough or strong enough to be in there. This is Shakes.
Yeah, on the voiceover, isn't it? Yeah. So you know straight away that you're not tough and you're not strong.
Yeah. So there's a bang on the door. Now I felt really awful, but I got generally excited because it's Bacon.
It's Kevin Bacon, and you actually went, yay, Bacon!
Because everyone loves Kevin Bacon.
I did my best not to make eye contact with you when you said that.
We've all seen him on the mobile adverts when he sold out, and his dancing around Footloose. It's all good.
Yeah.
So I got quite excited.
Spoiler alert. Bacon's not a good guy.
Bacon is not good in this one. Really.
The character is Sean Noakes.
Yeah. So he bangs on the door and he's like, lose the clothes. And basically gets him to take off his clothes to put his uniform on. And
well, you think it's to put his uniform on.
But it's not. First, it just makes him strip down to his underpants. His hand there goes, and the rest. I was like,
Shakes is like, what? You want me to stand here naked? He's like, yeah, and he's like, now you're getting it, now you're catching on.
Yeah.
So Shakes has just stood there naked, and then he's like, what now? And
Get dressed.
And you're like, when he's like telling him to take his clothes off, and you assume it's just to put his uniform on, you're a bit like, he's just trying to intimidate him, all that. But then when he makes him get naked, and then he just looks at him, he like eyes him up, doesn't he? And he's like,
well, I don't know, I was being
get
a bit
dressed.
Bomby.
Like, that's...
It's not good.
That's not nice. That's worrying.
No. So he's basically, on the voiceover says there's like four guards, or one on each level. They are in, you see that they're all in the exercise area, and they're saying about how they're all violent offenders. And there's like basically a whole big montage of shit of them like doing work and classes and stuff. And then they're in the canteen, and Michael gets his tray knocked onto the floor.
Yeah.
And they have a massive fight, breaks out, and they just like take their time. Well, Bacon takes his time going to break it up. So he gets like everyone to sit down, and he's like, oh, Hell's Kitchen boys. And he's like, he looks like he's trying to be really nice. He's like, oh, where's your food? And they're like, oh, it's on the floor.
Did you get to have your lunch? And Michael's like, no, I got to smell it. And he's like, oh, that's a good one, yeah. And then they go to walk off, don't they? And he's like, whoa, where are you going? And Michael says, oh, you told us to get lunch. He's like, oh, you don't need to line up. There's plenty of food where you're standing, because their lunch is all over the floor. Michael's like, I'm not hungry. He's like, you're hungry because I tell you you're hungry. Get down and eat. And forces them to eat their lunch.
Then there's like another guy who's coming over. I didn't get his name, but he's like possibly the only nice guard, and you don't see him ever again. This is the only time you see him.
Yeah, and this is the 1 minute that he comes over. I can't remember his name either. I don't think they actually give you his name.
But he like sees him and he tells him to stop, and he's like, he's like, oh no, I'm happy. He's like, what, it's my shift now. And he's like, oh no, I'm happy to keep going.
Yeah, no, he's like, to carry on. And he's like, no, you're eating into my shift. I'm in charge now.
Yeah, so off you go. So yeah,
oh, it's the blackguard in it, because Noke says, says to him, don't fuck with me, boy. And the blackguard just looks right back at him. Then he's like, no, you fuck with me, I dare you. And
yeah.
You're like, cool, I'm fucking banging. Smash him in the face, he's a prick. And then, yeah, Noakes shits himself.
Yeah.
Because a guy stood up to him and, like, put him in his place straight away. And like, he's like, oh, this ain't over. And he's like, oh, whatever, fuck off. And he gets the boys off the floor, makes them stop eating their lunch off the fucking floor. And you're like, great. Now can we not have any more bacon?
Yes.
I've had enough of bacon. He's already eyed up a naked boy in a weird way. And now he's making him eat food off the floor. Like, he's obviously a sadistic fuck.
Yeah.
Let's not have any more bacon.
Yeah. Unfortunately, we get loads more, which we don't need.
But we immediately get more bacon.
Then they're walking down the corridor with Noakes, and he's talking about how the place runs, and it's run by rules and discipline. And this walks him into...
The night, isn't it?
Yeah. So he walks him into this, like, caged room, but as they're walking in, you can then see, like, a load of other men, and I was like... Oh, I've got such a big no feeling right now. And I kind of looked to him and I don't think I really want to watch this film anymore.
Yeah.
I was like, I don't want to watch this anymore. So there's like loads of them in the room. They get them to turn around and face out. So their backs are to the guys. And I think Notes goes up to Michael first. And he's like, what do you want? And he's like, a blowjob. Like, straight out. I was like, bleh. So then all the boys, you don't see them getting assaulted, but you can hear them, like, screaming and shouting.
Yeah, the camera pulls away.
And then the voiceover, which is Shake, says that was the night, it was his 14th birthday. Bomb. So then there's, like, lots of talks about how they were getting, like, abused most nights, and that Father Bobby, like, their family, they said they didn't want their family coming to visit. I didn't want them to see them. I didn't want to have to talk about it. And the only person that visited was Father Bobby, but they didn't really want to see him because he...
But they couldn't stop him.
No.
Yeah.
So he basically, Noakes is trying to stop them seeing Father Bobby because he's concerned, obviously, they might rat him out.
Yeah.
So Father Bobby's like quite firm with Noakes. He's like, no, I'm talking to him. So then you see Noakes outside trying to listen in because he's a knob,
like spying through the window.
Yeah, it's grim.
And Shakes is talking to Father Bobby, and it's horrible as well because Father Bobby knows something's up.
Yeah,
and he's like,
because you've lost loads of weight, and he's like, oh, you know what, the food's like shit, isn't it? So
Father Bobby gives him like a tries to motivate him to keep going and all that. Obviously thinking it's something different is going on. He's like, don't let him see you cry, you know, stand up.
Oh, he gives him a hug and stuff. He said, I didn't want to let him go. And I was like, ugh.
You think it would help if he was just fighting with the other kids in there and stuff like that?
Yeah.
And to like, but because you know what's actually happening, you're like, wow, that speech really doesn't apply and it's probably actually making it worse.
Yeah. Because he's just like, well.
He's basically telling him to like, you got to stick it out. You got to, you know.
Yeah.
Tough it out.
Whereas if he'd
can do it, you can get through this, and like, don't let them see you cry, just be a man and stuff like that. And it's been like, oh, that's actually, in this situation, probably the worst thing you could say.
Yeah, but I'm sure if he'd known differently, he would have said something else.
Yeah.
So basically then the voiceover says that you hear lots of the inmates crying, and you always hear the muffled cry, the poor John...
Yeah, he talks about, like, you can hear him screaming at night, but there's certain ones that sound a bit different. And, yeah, one of the other guards has visited John in the night.
Yeah.
He says in the voiceover, oh, the
it's Ralph Ferguson.
John, Ralph Ferguson, yeah.
Has paid him a visit. I was like,
paid him a visit. Comes out of the room with, like, his shirt unbuttoned and his clip-on tie hanging off, swigging a beer.
Yeah, it's fucking grim. So, the less we talk about it, the better, really, because it's disgusting. So, then they're in their classroom and they're learning about the Count of Monte Cristo, and I think they're all the boys are, like, kicking off, the teacher's trying to teach them, and...
Not interested.
They're not interested, obviously. And then he says that he really likes... So he sorts of shakes. He's like, well, actually, your book report was really good. He's like, I like this story because I like how he has, like, vengeance, basically, isn't it? Like,
yeah,
it takes him a while, but then he gets his own back. He gets vengeance. So he goes, oh, look, well, if you enjoyed the book that much, have this copy for yourself. So that's really good. Oh, God. And then the next bit is there. You see them all getting put into a room and locked in, like a in isolation, yeah. And it's basically, it's all around touch football. Why this was ever allowed, I have absolutely no fucking idea, but it's guards against inmates.
Yeah.
I'm like, these are grown men against children.
Yep.
Like, and
it's supposed to be touch football, which is like, you put two hands on someone, that's a tackle. But they play like, touch football is full contact.
It's awful. Yeah, basically they're trying to work out, I think the guards pick the teams, don't they?
I'm not sure.
So I think they mentioned about how the guards, like, pick them. And they there's a kid there called Rizzo, who is, like, the strongest. So
because that's it, Michael's like, who can talk and everyone will listen?
Yeah. So they get Rizzo involved. Anyways, they you see, like, clips of it, and it's really rough. And basically the guards lose.
Yeah, so they convince, Michael convinces Rizzo that they shouldn't, because Rizzo doesn't want to play. He's like,
no,
I keep my head down. Yeah. The guards leave me alone, I don't think. Michael convinces him that because they're playing football, that if Rizzo plays and they win, they can fight back, and it will be a massive lift to everyone.
Yeah.
So Rizzo plays, they win, it's a big lift. They also get some hits in on the guards. There's some quite brutal, like, elbows being thrown and things.
Bacon's not very happy, which is a shame.
He threatens Rizzo.
Yeah. So they do the game. They've lost. The kid's excited and happy. They're chanting Rizzo. And then basically they get put into a thingy and they're just, beaten. So they're all left inside their solitary confinement for a few days, I think. Then you find them all in the hospital ring and they find out that Rizzo's dead because the guards have kicked him to death. Like, literally beaten him to death.
Yeah, so all four of the friends are in the infirmary where they've been beaten so badly, but Rizzo's not even made it to the infirmary. He's just
dead.
They killed him.
Fucking gross.
Over a fucking football game.
Yeah. Knobs. So by this point, I kind of wanted all the guards just to die. Like, I really was... not enjoying this film at all by this point.
No, it's rough.
It's horrible.
Brutal. Yeah.
It's fucking horrible. So this is spring of 1968, and the four of them are all sit around a table, and they, I think, because it's coming up to the end of Shakes's time.
He's got his...
probation.
No, has he got his paper, or he's saying it's not going to be long.
Yeah, so they're basically saying that they don't want to ever speak about it again. No one ever needs to know what's happened to them. So basically they're talking about, I guess, what they're looking forward to when they're not in there. And like, little John's like, I just want to have a night of sleep where no one's coming into my room. It's horrible. So they're talking about the night that he's due to be released as Shakes. And I was like, I don't think he's going to get away with this on his last night. And lo and behold, I was correct. His door opens. He's like, oh, I've got some people who want to say goodbye. So down the four boys go down that same hallway. And then you just, I think, hear them all screaming again.
And the voiceover says, this was the day I'll never... I don't remember exactly what happened to me in that room. I couldn't tell you, but I remember the date and it was my last night there.
It was June 1st, 1968.
See, something, it was like the day his childhood died or
something
like that. And,
so we're now into fall 1981.
So that closes like the second chapter of the film, as it were.
Yeah.
You know what's happened, and then it sets up this bit.
It does, like, yeah. I think
how it does the time jump, and then they sort of, as we're just about to see, they start off sort of introducing the characters again as adults,
yeah.
As if we know nothing about them as adults.
Yeah. But before we move on, I think what the film did quite well was you had, like, the bright, sunny streets of Hell's Kitchen, and although their life was pretty wank, they were still, like, playing in fire hydrant water, and they were taking hot dogs.
Yeah, things might be rough, but they
like,
still
it was bright and sunny, and it was, like,
they had a childhood.
Jolly music. They were out playing in the streets. They had each other. They were dancing. It was all great. And then they go into this place, and everything's, like, that grey, blue. It's fucking miserable. They look ill as fuck. Like, so you kind of been taken on quite a journey already, where by this point, I literally was just like, yeah, I don't like this film.
You're like, where can this film go from here that they can get some sort of...
Yeah, because it's just, yeah. And then
payback,
you think, like,
or whatever.
Let alone thinking this was, like, allegedly true. It's just grim.
The fact, and yeah, and you're kind of like, what the fuck can happen now in this film? Like,
yeah.
We've had that. Where are we going to go now?
Where's Batman?
Where's Derp Devil? They're in Hell's Kitchen. Where is he?
Where the fuck is Derp Devil? So you see two males, and you hear some awesome 80s music, and they go into a bar called McHale's, which is, and they talk about how these two guys are pretty deadly.
Yeah.
They work for the West Side Boys, and the blonde guy has killed, he kills people, and he robs people, and he's a massive druggie. And the dark haired guy is equally as deadly. He was 17 years old when he killed his first person.
Don't they say one of them got paid like $50 for a murder? Is it?
I didn't write it down. One of those.
So yeah, I think it's the dark haired one. He's like committed his first murder at 17 and was paid $50.
Yeah. So at this point, I was looking at them. I was like, oh, one of those is John. I thought the dark-haired guy was John.
Yep.
And the blonde-haired guy was the tall blonde kid, who's Michael.
Yeah.
We were like, you got one of them right. And I was like, yeah. So the two blokes sit down at the bar, and there's like two men sat at the other end of the bar talking about politics. So they basically call the bar guy over and it's like, tell them not to talk about that shit here, like, not interested. So he goes down and says, you can't talk about politics here, and then points at the two blokes, and they're like, oh, okay. So the blonde haired guy gets up to go to the toilet, because they're talking about what food they're going to order, aren't they?
Yeah, he says he needs to go to the toilet, and he asks the dark haired guy to order him something to eat.
Oh my god, this bit.
And then
he walks through the bar, to like the restaurant seating bit,
yeah.
And he looks at a table, and eating food, fucking Bacon, and he looks at him.
I love the fact that we could use his character name, but it's easy to say,
yeah.
Bacon.
It's Kevin Bacon, isn't it?
He's just sat there eating his food, and he walks past that, and he can't take his eyes off.
Yeah,
him,
and he's
like,
staring at him.
Even you were like, "Oh shit!"
I was like, "Oh my god!" If that was me, I'd have to run into that bathroom and vomit.
Yeah,
I'd have to vomit a lot, and then I'd be like,
"I think I'd
so
just, I think
fucking
I'd just pass out." If
angry.
I was looking right
yeah.
at him, I'd
be seeing red, I would
he's like,
just tear him a new
stares
one.
At him, doesn't he? And yeah. Then Noakes is like, can I help you with something? And he's like, not right now, no.
No.
No. He goes to the toilet, like splashes water on his face and is proper freaking out.
So, yeah. So he's looking in the mirror. And this is a bit where, actually, when he pointed it out, he said you really liked it. Because he's staring at himself in the mirror. And then he like literally starts... Because this is this part I was going to, I'd be vomiting everywhere.
He's gone
and
like, really
crying.
Pale, and he's
yeah.
splashing water on his face, and then he can't help himself.
But he smiles.
Yeah, and he starts to crack a grin, and you're like, oh.
So, I think he calls him a motherfucker as well. It's hilarious. I would have called him something else, but... So, he goes to the bar, and he says to the dark-haired guy, you really need to come and see this. And they start walking towards him, and he's like, yeah, that's definitely him. And he's like, bingo.
Then they step into a stairwell and check their guns are loaded.
Yeah. And then they walk towards
him. Then pop
him.
Back in for a chat.
So they sit down and he's like, oh, how's it going? It's been a long time. You must be happy to see us. And he's like, I don't know who you are. I don't know if he generally doesn't.
It's brilliant because Noakes is like, we've got no idea who you are. And John, or sorry, the blonde guy, because he didn't know for sure yet. He's like, take a minute. It'll come to you. It's really unsettling.
Yeah. So he's like, oh, you know, it's hard for us to forget about you and stuff. And then I think suddenly he twigs and he sees them as their younger selves. And they're like,
they tell him their names as well, don't they?
Yeah.
They tell their names. He's like, you're looking at John Riley and Tommy Marcano, is it?
So, I don't know. I didn't write that.
Noakes is like, oh, right, yeah.
How have you been? Oh, this point, I actually went, what the fuck?
As if he never done nothing. Like, what are the you fuck? Right? Yeah, nice to see you again. Yeah.
How you doing? How you been? So basically then they talk about something. They say something to him. Anyways, but it's, the thing that got me, I think that's probably why I didn't write anything else down, was he's like, I tried to make you tough.
It's before that when he says, after they tell him who they are, and Noakes is like, oh. So what do you want? And John just says, same thing I've always wanted, to watch you die. Yeah. And that's when they put their guns on the table. Yeah, Noakes starts shitting himself. And he's like, oh yeah, you were weak. I tried to make you tough.
Sure.
No, you didn't. You raped them.
Yeah.
It's not, that doesn't toughen up anyone.
No, it's just fucking wrong. So basically, I think he said, if you do this, you'll burn in hell. Oh, they will burn in hell for killing you, will they not?
You motherfuckers are going to burn in hell, and that's when they're like, you first.
They basically shoot the shit out of him. They take it in turns.
They do, yeah. They each fire like a couple of bullets and then let the other one fire a couple of bullets. Like, cause that's what friends do.
Sharing is caring.
And then the best bit is that they calmly walk out of the bar, and he pays the bartender for the food that they ordered, but they couldn't eat, and even apologises. He's like, oh, sorry, I should have ordered that food to go, and then leave. Like,
love it. So, Shakes goes to see them in prison, and he says that, like, their friendship has changed over the years, but they're still always going to be there for each other.
There's still that bond between them, but they're not as close as they once were.
No. Then I think they're talking about how it's Noakes.
Yeah, so Shakes goes to see him in prison. And when he sits down to talk to him, one of them leans forward and says, one down, Shakes. And
he's
what are you talking about? And then the other one says, one Sean Noakes. And Shakes is like, whoa.
Yeah. So then you see, I think he talks about how he's going to call Michael.
He gets a message from Michael to meet him.
And you see Brad Pitt.
Brad Pitt is old.
Is Michael. And he said he wanted to meet him. And he's like, what did they say? And I think he's like, basically, he's working for the prosecution. He's got a plan.
Yeah. And he says he's going to. He's asked for the case specifically. He knows the neighbourhood. Doesn't reveal that he knows the two people accused. And that he's going to prosecute him in an open court.
Yeah.
Shakes is like, don't do that, you'll get shot, you'll get murdered.
Yeah.
Like, things like that. And Michael, that's when Michael clues him in that, I'm not taking this to win, I'm taking it to lose.
Yeah.
And this is where the plan starts.
And then he says, like, how he's found all of the guards.
Yeah, and he's got, like, folders on all of them now. Yeah, the like other three guards that were left.
Years and years worth of work that he's been doing. So he's, yeah, basically he wants to do that. And there's, like,
he says
a plan in place, isn't there, with...
Yeah, so he's been doing all this research on the guards, and he's like, you know, John and Tommy have started this now. It's not the way I wanted to start. It's messy. This isn't what I wanted to do, but I've got all this. It's begun. You need to finish it.
Mm.
It's time for everyone to get their revenge.
Yeah.
And he's like, I want the other guards. I want the Wilkinson home for boys. I want it all.
Yeah. So they had a plan, because obviously they couldn't, no one could find out that they knew each other.
No.
So they found ways of communicating. So one of them is like writing in the newspaper like a name. Edmund.
Edmund, yeah. That's to tell Michael to call Shakes.
Yeah.
And then the other way around is that Michael leaves a message from a fake girlfriend for Shakes to call.
Yeah. So they never spoke to him other than to see him at court. And he asked for a favour from Danny Snyder. who is a lawyer to King Bobby.
Benny.
Oh, went wrong around.
So Danny Schneider, who's just about to meet King Benny, and then we realise it. But he's John and Tommy's lawyer. And this is when Shakes and Michael are talking. Shake says, King Benny's going to change it because he's not a good lawyer. And Michael's like, no, it's perfect. Trust me.
Yeah.
Because it'll make his plan work better that they've got this shitty lawyer. He doesn't want John and Tommy to, like, know.
No.
And then this is where they... Because they bring King Benny in on the plan as well, don't they? He gets a letter. He reads a letter. So it's obviously from Shakes to tell him about part of the plan. And then he immediately says... tell someone, bring Danny Schneider to see me. And then he burns the letter straight away.
Yeah. So he says, he turns up and it's Dustin Hoffman. And he's talking to the king. He's like, oh, his life is at risk. And like, he's made mistakes and stuff. And basically he's an alcoholic. And he goes, this is a murder case. Like, I can't be doing this. I'm an alcoholic.
Yeah.
It's not for me anymore. Like, I'm drunk now.
Yeah.
And he says basically that it is for him. And... So I think then we're at...
King Benny tells him, like...
the sleepers. He calls them the sleepers.
Yeah, so King Benny tells Danny Schneider that you're going to have the questions and the answers written down. All you've got to do is read.
You can read, right?
Yeah. And then Danny Schneider is something like, and what about if I lose? And King Benny says to him, then you go down for the dirt nap.
Yeah.
Danny Schneider's like, for the dirt nap. I've not heard that before, but okay.
It's all and then, good.
Yeah, in the voiceover, he says this is time for King Benny's sleepers to go to work. And it's a term for anyone who's done...
Juvenile
time.
Yeah. So then he says about how Carol still lives in the area, and it's Minnie Driver.
It is, yeah. He goes to visit
Minnie
Carol.
Minnie Driver. So she's like in her flat, and she's social services, I think.
Yep.
So she was dating Michael, and she wondered why he's taken the prosecution...
Yeah.
Because obviously they were friends. He says, I don't know why. But at this point, she is dating Johnny? John?
Yeah.
They're like married or?
No, I think it's Tommy who's married because they say he's married, but he's got a wife he never sees.
Yeah.
I think John and Carol were just a couple.
Oh, yeah. So I've written down Hell's Kitchen's Lost and Found of Shit. But I can't remember what that was all about.
That's the fat man in. They go to see the fat man. So I think he's partly in on the plan.
Yeah.
He's like, if you want a Rolls Royce, you go to Great Britain. If you want champagne, you go to France. If you want to know secrets and you want dirt on somebody, you come to Hell's Kitchen. We're like a lost and found for shit that people don't want known about.
So then they're talking to King Benny, and he says about how he's like, he's always sorry that he couldn't do more for you. I was like, aw, bless the gangster. Then they're in court, and it's Hoffman's character.
Oh, is it before this? Did we miss the bit out where King Benny goes to see the West Side Boys, who Tommy and Michael work for?
Oh, and says, and what's
he basically says, like, because they're worried about Michael getting shot for taking the case.
Yeah.
And King Benny lets them know, like, you can abuse him in the street, you can say what you like to him, and encourages him to do it. He's like, but no one can put, a hit on him. No one can try and say, unless I say so, he's untouchable.
Yeah.
So just to protect him in that way, but also make it look like everyone is pissed with him.
So then they're in court, and Hoffman's, like, proper, like, bumbling his way through it, isn't he?
Yeah, he's literally just reading off a notepad as well.
Yeah.
He's still like...
Still, and like Brad Pitt's face.
Yeah, he's like, oh my God. Permanent eye roll, like, fucking just read the notes.
Like, well, I think at one point it was like, it wasn't even going to happen.
Yeah.
He wasn't going to say it. And he's like, you can see him like mouthing what he needs to say, like Brad Pitt's character.
Yeah.
And he finally does it. Then it's dinner with the family. So he's gone home.
Shakes goes to have dinner with his family.
Yeah, so he has dinner with his family, reiterates back to his dad's a knob.
yeah, it really does.
Like, he just doesn't give a shit. It's poor mum. So this is when they have an idea to get the witnesses via Bobby. and they go talk to him, and he's like, don't shit a shitter.
Yeah, there's a good saying that. I like that.
That's really cool. Then, so basically, like, he's like, at this point, he's saying, so what you're asking me to do is to lie.
Yeah, you want me to swear to
put
God.
Put my hand on the Bible and swear
to God and then lie.
He said, he's asking to save two of your boys. And then he's like, at this point, he's like, I need to tell him. So then he tells
Father Bobby, say, the line he uses is like, what about the life that was taken? Like, what's that worth? And Shakes is like, to me, nothing. And he's like, well, I have to know why.
Yeah.
And then Shakes is like, I'm asking a priest who's known me my whole life to stand in court and lie for me. Gonna have to tell him what happened.
Yeah.
And this is quite an uncomfortable scene. Yeah,
like it just is like a big long pause on De Niro's face when he's like listening to the news.
You can't really hear him telling.
No.
Like you don't hear it. Is it music? Yeah. And Carol's there as well, and this is the first time she hears about it all.
Yeah.
And yeah, but it's just a close up on like Robert De Niro's face and his eyes, and you just see like little tears. Not much movement in his face, but you sort of see his eyes like well up, don't you?
Yeah, it's horrible.
And it's really well done.
So this is when they're back at court, and it's a lady at the table. So she heard gunshots and saw the faces as they walked away. And it's at this point I realised that Brad Pitt was the prosecution. I don't know why, but I did. I was like, oh, okay.
It was the first time you saw him actually question anyone, wasn't it?
Yeah, exactly. And then this is when he says about the whole glance thing, and he's like, oh, so you glanced at them? He's like, no, I saw their faces, but you glanced at them? He's like, how much did you have to drink? And then she's like, oh, I might have just... So basically just shot down that whole argument about how she saw their faces.
Yeah.
So that's that. Then they have a meeting with King Benny's nephew, who apparently is an honest cop for internal affairs. And he's...
Brilliant.
They're sat in like vehicles in this car talking about stuff, and they're trying to find a druggie or someone who killed someone.
One of the guards from Wilkinson's now works for the police. I think it's Styler.
Adam Styler.
And of course, Shakes has got from Michael this big folder on him. So it turns out he's a cop, but he shakes down drug dealers and steals all their money. And they've got loads of evidence on how much money he's been making.
Yeah.
And he gives it all to Styler, doesn't he? And he's like, Not Styler, the nephew, King Benny's nephew.
Yeah.
He's like, "Why? Where did you get all this?" He's like, "Don't matter. Don't worry about it."
And then he's like, "Oh, here's this gun and the ammunition."
Yeah, pulls out a gun. He's like, "This was used to kill this drug dealer, and it's got this guy's fingerprints on it." And like, fucking hell.
Yeah. I was like, "Oh my god." And then it cuts. I don't think you hear very much of it, but it's basically like you can see clips in the court, and like Hoffman's like proper getting back into swing of things. He's like,
got a bit of a strut going around.
He's like really getting into it again. Then you're on like on an underground train or subway train, and it's Minnie is sits down and Mickey sat next to her.
Minnie and Mickey.
Yeah.
Or Carol and Michael, as they're called in the film. I love that you've just called them Minnie and Mickey.
Yeah.
You've been waiting to get that out since.
No, I didn't even realise, because I was going to try and write down and keep up with everything. And also now I'm really tired. So anyways, she said that nobody'd sent her, and I think she's just trying to work out why the fuck he is prosecuting two of his friends. And then she said that she knows the full... He said, talking about the witness, and he's like, he needs to tell him the full story.
Yeah, so
she's
says,
like, I know the whole story.
It's been like 2 weeks since he spoke to Father Bobby, he hasn't heard nothing. Michael's like, oh, get him to tell him the full story and know what it means. And she's like, he did. I was there.
I heard everything.
Like, why didn't you tell me? And he like freaks out a bit, doesn't he?
And then actually turns around and he's got off the train.
Disappeared. It's like, that was weird.
Yeah. So then... Little Caesar. Now I like Little Caesar. So
this is the next one
is Little Caesar, who is a drug dealer. He's not little though.
No.
No, he's not
massive.
Little. He's massive and he is a badass. So yeah, he's a drug dealer.
Isn't he wearing like a fez as well?
I think like a fez and a big I don't know if he had a coat. I don't know, like a fur coat.
Like a shiny jacket or something.
Something like that.
And he walks with a cane.
Yeah, like he's really cool.
But like, he definitely doesn't need a cane. No. He just walks for it to look cool.
He had a little brother, had died, and his little brother that died was called Rizzo.
Yep. And Little Caesar gets a visit from King Benny.
From King Benny. And he's talking about... So it mentioned... Henry Addison is a god, and he's going to pay £8,000 off.
So Henry Addison's got himself in debt for people, because they make a point of saying that he, I think he works for the, is it the mayor or someone?
Something like that, yeah.
But they say, like, King Benny finds out his sexual habits haven't changed, and that the boys he needs for parties are very expensive, and that he can't afford it, so he's been borrowing money. And King Benny says to Shakes, like, he owes £8,000. And King Benny's paid off the £8,000 for him. So he goes to see Little Caesar and asks for his eight. He says, I want you to give me £8,000. And Little Caesar's like, why? Like, you're King Benny. Why would you need my money? When are you going to pay it back? And he's like, I'm not. Someone else is going to pay it back. And then, gives up Addison.
Yeah.
And then gives Little Caesar a bit more motivation to collect his money. From Addison.
Yeah, saying he killed your brother. And he said, I thought he died of pneumonia.
Yeah, that's great, that bit. He's like, they said he died of pneumonia. And King Benny just says, they said.
Yeah.
They lied.
Oh, third down.
Yeah.
So that. So then they're talking about how they're going to put a face to the victim. So they call Ralph Ferguson. It is. Oh my god, I can't even. Oh. The thing is, I felt really sorry for the actors having to play these guards.
Yeah. And like, because they bring the thing in, don't they, about how Ralph Ferguson, he's got a kid.
Yeah.
He's a Sunday school teacher.
Oh, and he's like, how did you, do you ever leave your son with Noakes? Oh, I was like, I can't even.
Yeah, so they do a nice little pally bit with Brad Pitt, like, somehow biting his lip and talking to him like he's a nice guy. And then Danny Schneider goes through his list of questions, talking about, brings up the Wilkinson Home for Boys and things they did there.
Ever, like, punish the boys in the boys, like, with bats or whatever, or fists or open hand? And then it, like, basically just goes, did you ever, like, sexually assault the kids, like the boys? And it's like, oh my god, just go for it. Just go for it.
I quite like the bit in this as well, because it goes, like, you see that Ferguson, he's sort of breaking down, isn't he?
Yeah.
And you hear, like, muffled talking, but you can't hear what they're saying, and he just goes, he gets upset, and he's like, yes! They're like, yes, what? Yeah, and he's like, yes, Sean Noakes had incident with some boys. Yes, I was there. Yes, I did it too. And everyone in the court's like,
what
the fuck is going on now?
Yeah.
So they basically get
him just to confess broken.
He confesses to assaulting children in an open court. And the judge is like, when he steps down, the judge is like, if I was you, I'd stay at home. Some people are going to want to talk to you.
So he said about how it was, it's like his friend, he got like flashbacks, and that basically he was stricken from the case. And then Brad Pitt's just like, oh, people rest. So then the judge says to defence that you got until, is it, I haven't got a witness.
Yeah, because they still haven't heard from Father Bobby. They don't know.
He's like, you've got until 9 a.m. for your witness to sum on, or you need to sum up. So then you get a church and you see like a Bible, and I think this is Shakes going around with it all, or is it? I think it might be Father Bobby actually. And he like goes into the shop to get some cigarettes, and like a note's passed as well.
A guy goes into the church, goes to a certain pew, goes to a Bible and pulls an envelope out of it.
Yeah.
And then leaves. And then Father Bobby goes to the fat man's shop.
Yep.
Buys some cigarettes, and the fat man gives him the envelope and asks if everything's okay. And he's like, yep. And you're like, what the fuck's in this envelope? What's going on here?
Then a note gets given to Brad. And then he calls Father Robert Corner.
Carillo.
Oh my god, and then this was just greatness.
Have they done the happened to the other guards before Father Bobby takes the stand, or is that after?
I honestly don't remember.
So they get, just in case, they, after Ralph Ferguson testifies, like, they've got him, then they show you King Benny's nephew arresting the guard.
Yeah, yeah.
He gets taken away. And then they show you Little Caesar's men taking the other one out.
Oh, yeah, he gets shot.
They go to get his money. Obviously, he hasn't got the $8,000. And the voiceover says, like, he didn't need any more excuses. He knew about Rizzo, but he went to collect the $8,000 immediately. The guy ain't got it. He don't need another excuse. And they take him out by the airport and shoot him. So that's all of them down. And now all they've got left is to try and get their friends on a not guilty. And they win, basically. And then, Father Bobby comes in and takes the stand.
He takes the stand, and it's Brad Pitt's character, Michael's turn to question him first. And he's asking, like, where he was. And he's like, can you corroborate that? And he's like...
Danny Schneider talks to him first.
I don't remember. I just want to get to the really cool bit.
Okay.
Is it really important? I can't remember now.
Well, no, they just basically he asks Father Bobby if he was with the defendants on the night, and he says, yes, they went to the basketball game. They went to see the New York Knicks play. And then I think Danny Schneider's got quite a cool line. He says, if you were with the defendants at this time, they can't have been the ones to have shot Sean Noakes. And Father Bobby says, oh, not unless they shot him from the blue seats of Madison Square Garden. And Danny Schneider, as he sits down, goes, no, he wasn't shot from there.
Yeah.
I was like, yes.
So, like, Brad's thing is, like, well, you know, it's just your word, and what's your word worth, or whatever.
That's what he said, because he asked him, like, did you pay with a credit card? No. Did you get a receipt? No. Did anyone see you buy the tickets? No. Did anyone see you at the game? No. He's like, oh, so we, just because you're a priest, we've got to take your word for it, haven't we?
Yeah. And he's like, he said, but then what about these? And he basically pulls out three ticket stubs. I was like, what?
So now we know what was in the envelope. Yeah.
What the fuck?
Yeah, just hands them over.
Yeah. And he was like, well, he said, so why have you still got those if you've not got like a receipt or anything? He goes, because you never know when you might need to show someone.
Yeah, he's, something. You never know when someone might want more than your word.
Yeah.
Brad Pitt's like, has anyone ever questioned your word before today? He's like, no, they haven't. But there's a first time for everything. And you're just like, oh, Father Bobby!
He's fucking amazing. So, yeah. So they're found not guilty.
They are acquitted, found not guilty.
Happy days. Then I've written down, Brad Pitt is always eating in his films. He's eating at this point. I don't know what he's eating.
Hot dog.
A hot dog.
Goes for a hot dog. He two napkins.
Does. Lol. So then I think they all meet up at the end, don't they?
Yeah, so they let it all die down shortly after. I think they say on the voiceover, he works the losing end of a can't lose case.
Yeah.
Brad Pitt and then Michael, and then he retires.
Yeah.
Or resigns and gives it up. And then they let it die down a bit, and then they all meet up at a bar.
Yeah.
For a sort of last hurrah, last, as it were, thing. Celebrate.
And, Carol's there as well, and then they talk about how they had like singing, they like singing around the table and stuff, so that's all great. Oh, then they get to quite the sad bit. So they say that Johnny died at 29, and there's a picture of him dead, isn't there? Like a crime scene photo.
Yeah.
Was he shot? I can't remember.
No, he
OD'd.
He says it's next to the bottle of boiler gin that killed him, so I think he's alcohol poisoning.
Yeah.
Like, well, basically drinks himself to death.
Tommy was shot at 29.
Yeah.
So no, Johnny just turned 29 when he died, and Tommy was 29. He was shot dead. There's another creepy picture of him dead. Michael moved to England to be a carpenter.
Lives alone.
And Carol still works in social services and is a single mum. And basically in the picture, it's her and a kid, is basically one of the kids he was at the beginning.
Yeah, it's the same actor who played John as a kid.
Yeah.
And then he's named John Thomas Michael.
Yeah, something like that,
So, and his nickname that his mum gave him is Shakes. So he's named after all of the boys.
Very cute. So yeah, that's the end of that film.
We definitely did not do that film justice.
Because it's just hard. It's a hard one
to get through, yeah.
Because there's a fucking disgusting bit in the middle, which I just can't bring myself to talk about, because it's just so horrible. Repulsive. Oh, it's just like Goodfellas.
In a way,
this is a difficult one to do, because it's a lot of talking, it's a lot of watching. I can't sit there and scribe the whole court scene. I can't sit there and scribe everything that I sat and watched. It's really difficult.
Yeah.
It's one that you will either have to watch yourselves if you can bring yourself to do it. I mean, honestly, at least now you've got a fucking heads up, because I was not expecting that. Yeah, it's difficult to actually discuss because it's quite heavy. It's not like Daredevil where, you know, I could make more comments about the music and stuff when you're...
The dirt pays.
Yeah. There's nothing particularly hilarious about this film.
No, definitely not.
You know, it's a very serious film. I give it 3 out of 5.
Oh, I thought it'd get more than that.
No.
If that bit in the middle hadn't been about what it was about, if it had just been like them getting beat up, do you think it would have got a 4?
Don't know. I just don't know. It's just not nice. I think, I don't know whether it's just, I don't know what it is. Maybe it might be different if I didn't do the job I did. I don't know. But I just, it was horrible to have to see anything like that. It just wasn't very nice.
Yeah.
Not my cup of tea. I'm kind of happy I've seen it. You've wanted me to watch it for a little while.
Yeah, I just think it's a brilliant film. I just think it's so well made.
Yeah, and it is brilliant. I've put my word again, review the, is emotional.
Yeah, like a roller coaster, isn't it?
Cause yeah. It's not an easy watch. I like the bit at the end with the fight and the court, and that's great. I think maybe if I was to watch it again, it'd be easier if I wasn't fucking writing notes down. Maybe it might be a bit better to watch it again. I don't know. But yeah, it's just hard. It's a hard watch.
It makes you care. It makes you uncomfortable. Yeah, it's makes horrible. You like, oh my God, those poor kids.
Do you know, at the end of it, when I finished watching it, I actually generally felt sorry for all the actors that had to portray the guards. And I felt sorry for Bacon. I was like, I could... Oh my God, like, can you imagine?
Especially
hi, would you like this job? We're going to do this film, and it's basically, you're going to be a guard, but technically you're, like, raping the boys that are there. You'll be like, yeah, I don't think I can really do that. It is worth a watch. It's so good. Like I said, it's just the change in the feel of the film from the beginning to the middle with, like, it, you know, that's really clever. It takes you on a massive journey, but it is amazing, like, I think it's when I always say this all the time to you, you don't really understand why I felt like it, but when I read, is it 1984, the book?
Yep.
Like, I physically jumped when he's, like, in his bedroom and, like, the big brother eye finds him. So if, like you said, that feeling when you see him in the bar.
Yeah.
It is amazing how invested you are in them, but yeah, it is fucking rough. It's a hard fucking watch, but the ending is brilliant.
So worth a watch if you can bring yourself to stomach it, is what you're going with.
Yeah, what I'm going with, yeah. It's a tough one, but it is really good. But yeah, I don't really want to have to watch it again, because that middle bit really was just too much. Especially, it's like literally before that bit, I was like, bored, 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 bored.
You were actually saying that as well. You're like, when does something happen?
I was like,
and I'm like, oh, in about 10 minutes, you're going to wish you hadn't said that.
So yeah. So what am I watching next?
So next up is we're going to watch a video game adaptation film.
Ooh, okay.
They seem to be making a little bit of a comeback. So Tom Holland's going to be in one. They're making a TV show of a game called The Last of Us. They're remaking Mortal Kombat. So there's a new film of that. So I was like, oh, maybe we could go back and watch the original Mortal Kombat. But no, what I thought we'd do is take it right back, basically show you the reason why video game films don't get made a lot. And it's with one of the first ones they attempted. So we're going to watch Super Mario Brothers next.
Oh, okay. Fair enough. I'll look forward to watching that then. Hopefully it's decent. So as usual, if you want to get a hold of us, we are on Instagram and Facebook. And you can also email us on HayleyWatches2020@gmail.com. Instagram is Hayley_watches. And Facebook is just HayleyWatches. So, yeah, hope you enjoyed it. Take care, stay safe, and that's it for now.
Yeah. Ciao for now.
Ciao for now. Bye.
Hold up. Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.